This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You're listening to Tremendous Leadership with Dr. Tracy Jones.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Tremendous Leadership Leaders on Leadership podcast, where we pull back the curtain on leadership and we talk with leaders of all ages and stages about what it takes to pay the price of leadership. And today, I am tremendously excited because my guest is the one, the only, the tremendous Connor Boyack. Connor, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Let me tell you a little bit about Connor. Connor Boyack is the president of Libertas Institute. This is a free market think tank in Utah. In this capacity, Connor has spearheaded a number of successful policy reforms in the areas such as education reform, civil liberties, government transparency, business deregulation, personal freedom, and more. Some good ones there. A public speaker and author of over 40 books, Connor is best known for the Tuttle Twin books, a children's series introducing young readers to economics, politics, and civic principles. He is addicted to changing the world for the better, one life at a time. He primarily does this through the nonprofit he founded, Libertas Institute, one of the country's most impactful think tanks that helps reform policies in Connor's home state of Utah and across the nation. Connor, I cannot wait for our discussion on leadership.
Nor can I. There's a lot to talk about. Where do we even begin?
Well, first of all, I always like to give people contacts because people are like, Tracy, how on earth do you connect with these amazing people? Well, I got the introduction through Connor, through Mike Capuzzi. Hi, Mike. Mike had me on his podcast. He's the bite-sized book creator. And then I had him on my podcast. And just last month, he introduced me to Connor and Connor immediately got back to me. That's what tremendous people do. So I tell people as a speaker, the more you speak, the more you speak. And for meeting people, the more people you meet, the more tremendous people you meet. So Connor, again, let's get started with what it takes to pay the price of leadership. Father wrote a speech many years ago called The Price of Leadership. And in it, he talks about the four things that you are going to have to be prepared to give in order to pay the price of leadership. The first one is loneliness. And we've all heard that. It's lonely at the top. Heavy is the head who wears the crown. Jesus was alone a lot. What do you think about loneliness, Connor? Could you tell us what that means for you as a leader, maybe when you went through a season of that?
I think a lot of people want to participate in the upside of a business without being there for the downside. And so it's very easy to see when a company is profiting and doing well, everyone wants their share, so-called. But if an entrepreneur, a CEO is massively in debt, if they're using their personal credit cards to do payroll, if they're right. No one else is saying, oh, let me bear that burden with you. Let me shoulder the load. Like, no, of course not. That doesn't happen. So when I think of loneliness, I think of responsibility and how, like for my nonprofit, we employ 70 or 80 people overall with everything that we're doing. And I feel immense pressure to get things done, to get results. And people on my team have their own spheres of influence and impact that they're focused on. But I'm the one at the top responsible for like seeing all the chess pieces I need to move around. Or I like to use that spinning plate analogy where there's lots of spinning plates. One over there is getting wobbly. So you got to, you know, go give that some attention. Then you got to go to this other one that's kind of wobbly. So it is lonely in the sense that I don't know that like anyone in my organization can relate at all to what I experience and how burdensome that is. I'll be on a trip with my family and an idea will pop in my head and something that's urgent and needs to happen that maybe I let slip or something. And I'm like, there's no one in the organization that I've delegated that to yet, but it still has to get done. So it falls to me. Hey, honey, pull over. Let me take care of this really quick on the laptop or something for 10 minutes. And so just kind of the interruptions, the preoccupation in my mind where things are just always going and always thinking and always trying to forecast and look ahead and seek opportunities. It's such a unique experience. To that end, for that purpose, I have gone to great lengths to associate myself with other people, primarily through EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, that I joined, to just to be around people who are similarly situated, different businesses, different industries, different circumstances, but they get it. They're lonely like me. So let's be lonely together and let's at least kind of have a camaraderie. And that has helped me quite a bit.
I love that. And tell me about, you talked about the downside, and boy, every entrepreneur out there can relate to this, what you said about, you know, everybody wants to be a piece of it when it's happy. But in the beginning, yeah, when it's coming out of your bank account and how much do you really love it? Connor, when did you start the foundation? And tell me about the lean years, 70 and 80, that's a healthy sized business. Can you give me how long you were in that time before you got to the tipping point? Because a lot of our entrepreneurs out there are like five or less people and trying to grow.
Yeah. So I started Libertas about 12 years ago. At the beginning, it was just me. I had no manual. I had no clue what I was doing. I used to build websites for a living. I felt called by God to go onto this new path. I quit my job, took a big pay cut, took a huge risk. My mom thought I was condemning my life, my wife, to a life of poverty because she saw, wait, you want to do a nonprofit? And I was making good money being a web developer. I was moving up the ladder and doing all the things. And so my mom equated nonprofit with being poor. Mm-hmm. In reality, nonprofits are just, it's a tax classification. That's all it is. It's, you know, you can pay yourself well and market rates and everything if you've got the money. And so in the early years, it was very difficult. It was just me. I had no clue what I was doing. I hired the wrong people. I made a lot of mistakes. And so I would say the first 5 to 6 years were very, very slow growth. Oddly, a large inflection point for us was COVID. When COVID hit, our organization started firing on all cylinders. We tripled our fundraising. We sold, to give you a little snapshot, these books, these Tuttle Twins books that you mentioned. And we started that in 2014. And so for 6 years, 2014 through 2019, we sold a total of about 750,000 books. Now, for a self-published outfit, Mike Capuzzi will tell you, those are really good numbers. 750,000 books is impressive for over 6 years. In 2020 alone, we sold 1.3 million books, almost double the entire past 6 years. So our organization, all of a sudden, we're getting all this interest, all these families needing help. What happened to my country? Freedoms that I long took for granted. What's going on? You know, how do I talk to my kids about this? They're hearing weird stuff at school. And so we were in the position kind of when preparation meets opportunity is the quote that I think about, right? We had been slogging along for a while and humming along and doing okay, but then opportunity struck. Sadly, it was a silver lining and a very dark cloud of our shared experience with all that mess. But there were some silver lining. And for us, the result, it was a big growth period. And so our organization has kind of quadrupled in size over the past 3-4 years, which creates its own complexity and having to figure out how to be a leader. I'll be very frank with you. I struggle to be a leader because I started this whole organization. Like people will look at me and say, I'm a leader. They'll look at my output. They'll look at all the books I've written and millions of copies sold and all the, like, they'll look at these external things and they'll tie that to, oh, he's a leader because he's tip of the spear in all these different things or whatever. My challenge is, to me, leadership implies that you're leading a team and that you're intimate with them. You've got close relationships with them. And my struggle, just to be frank with you, is that I started this whole organization to get the work done. Like, I'm passionate about the work. And so I feel very tempted to like get in there and do the actual work and not just, I'm a leader and I spend all my time leading people, right? So for me, it's like that careful balance of how do I still meaningfully contribute to the work and satisfy my own kind of personal desire of why I started this to begin with, while balancing it with the fact that, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Mm-hmm. And I do want to go far, which means I do need a team, which means I need to tamp down that inclination I have to just jump in, close my office door, head down, do the work all day long. And I need to realize that I got to come up for air. I got to talk to my team. I got to support them. I got to make sure that they got what they need, because it's lonely for me. It's lonely for a lot of them as well, if they're kind of trapped in this, like, this role that they don't know how to do it, or I don't know what to do. So just kind of coming up for air and realizing that we've all got our insecurities. We've all got our challenges, and just trying to be there more for the team.
Absolutely. Well, you did a beautiful definition of being a leader and transitioning the role of leadership and hitting on the think tank or mastermind group with the EO. Absolutely brilliant. So let's talk about weariness. So we had a pre-meeting before this, and you're fighting the good fight. You're fighting a fight that if people were sane, it would not have to be fought, right? I mean, some of the stuff you're just like, how is this? Am I in the twilight zone or what's going on? How do you stay at top form? Because my dad would always say, you know, there's some people that are doing more than they need to, but the majority of society is going to be doing less. Somebody's got to pick up and shoulder the load. How do you stay at top fighting form?
Well, our think tank, we exist to increase freedom. So we're changing hearts, minds, and laws. And given that we're in the political arena for a lot of our work, we're meeting with elected officials, we're battling against other people who have totally different views and ideas who are trying to get their ideas implemented. And so it's a cage match. It's a constant cage match that requires thick skin for certain, but also joke with people. I say, I'm in the one industry that has the greatest job security. Like there will never not be political problems and government largesse that we're having to fight against. And so it is, it's weary for me in the sense that it feels like whack-a-mole a lot of times, right? Where it's like, okay, we solved that problem, but then boink, this one pops up and then we whack that one down and then this one. And another example that I often share when I think about our country is I feel like we're on the Titanic and we're heading towards the iceberg and there's not enough time to make a detour. Like these are thoughts that I feel about our country. That you look at just the financial situation, the debt, the inflation, the economy, the corruption, the bribery, the all this censorship, everything. So I feel like we are headed toward an iceberg. There is going to be a collision, which is going to create a lot of calamity. Do I want to rearrange deck chairs on the Titanic and just feel like I'm doing something productive to then just, you know, deal with that collision? I feel like my role is to get as many families on the lifeboats as possible. We can't save the ship. I personally feel like we can't save the ship. The ship is going to have a crash. There is going to be a lot of chaos, but we can save a ton of families in the meantime, get them out on those little lifeboats where they can more nimbly get around the iceberg and the other obstacles and get to safety. That has value. Even if I go down with the ship, I can save a ton of people. Yeah. That is best work that I can imagine. So my faith is I'm a Mormon, member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And we have a particular scripture where one of our church leaders said something like, he talked about the importance of wasting and wearing your life out, bringing to light the hidden things of darkness. There are things you can be weary, like working fast food every day, a meaningless job. I mean, all work is to some degree meaningful, but you can feel like it lacks purpose and meaning and everything like that. There's lots of things that you can do for work. I find significant meaning being weary for a good cause. Mm-hmm. Changing people's lives, helping them talk to their kids about these things, having meaningful conversations, getting more financially prepared, being more aware of their environment, being skeptical of authority and all the lies that we're being told, being civically engaged and able to be the change they wish to see in the world, right? Like that to me is a worthy cause. I've got deep bags that are forming under my eyes. I've got all the things, but to me, it is a hallmark of meaningful effort that has made a difference for others. And so I love being weary when my energy is applied towards productive, meaningful causes.
Oh, absolutely. And that is the meaning, you know, there's good weariness and there's bad weariness. And when that light, well, then Paul, the Apostle Paul, he's my hero. Run the race, stay true to the faith. Yeah, I mean, it's there's no greater way to be poured out. And so that is a beautiful, when you orient it back to your why, that's where you get the intrinsic divine, supernatural. And we see it throughout history of people doing that. So yeah. I love the Titanic example was absolutely brilliant, Connor. Okay. Loneliness, weariness. The next thing my dad talked about was abandonment. And typically abandonment has a negative connotation, you know, fear of abandonment, or I'm in pet rescue. So that's a big no-no. But what he called abandonment was really just stop thinking about what you like and want to think about, maybe arranging deck chairs, and start focusing on what you ought and need to do, making real meaningful change. So Connor, as especially stuff starts exploding and you get all these people coming out and saying, I need you to do this. I need you to represent this. I want to partner with this. Can you write a book on this? I can't even imagine all the different ways and plates that get thrown your way. How do you stay singularly focused on the highest and best use of your calling and time?
That's a powerful question. For a long time, I struggled with. I have gotten better at it recently. So before I started all this, I was, as I said, a web developer. And I wasn't an awesome web developer. I was decent. I was good, but I wasn't great. However, what set me apart was my communication ability. I would communicate super well, and I was extremely responsive. Mm-hmm. When clients would email me or people have questions, I would be on the phone immediately. I would drop what I was doing and I would go communicate and I would get them what they needed. That had a huge benefit in my early years. I built a very successful career for myself, being only a good web developer by being an amazing communicator and trying to create value for others, trying to think of what they needed. The problem when I transitioned into this role and starting my own organization, it was okay in the early years because I was building something from scratch. It was lean and mean or whatever. But in recent years, it's actually been a big problem because I habituated myself into being a yes man, into dropping what my priorities were to get that dopamine hit of responding to somebody else and helping them with what they need. And a lot of times it was like, oh, hey, you wrote this thing 6 years ago. I had a question about like just all the like most random things. And I would like, oh, hey, let me go reply. Oh, hey, let me go, you know, and I would get that dopamine hit. So I've had to retrain myself. I'm not by any means perfect at it yet, but making sure that like it's okay to ignore people. It's okay to say no, which I struggle with. And so the one thing one of the things that has helped me substantially improve is I'm a member of Strategic Coach by Dan Sullivan. It's a coaching program for entrepreneurs all over the country, but all over the world. And I've been in it for about 2 years now. They have a process in there called unique ability. It's his model for like the things where you get the highest energy, where you get the highest reward, where you have the highest impact. And they have this whole process that they walk you through where you inventory all your activities. What do you do? Where do you spend your time? What all do you got going on? And then you classify them in different buckets and you figure out, okay, this is my unique ability. I'm competent at this, but it's not really my unique ability. I'm incompetent at this stuff, but I still have to do it. And so they systematize it and then create this process where you can start to just like identify specifically everything that isn't your unique ability. Let's now start chipping away at like delegating and eliminating and so forth for all these things. Having that, in fact, I have a document now. The result of that process was I have a document that says Connor's unique ability. And it lists out, here are the different things. You know, I'm a strategic freedom fighter and I help try to, you know, save the world one life at a time and all these things. Public speaker, author, da, 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 and it goes into detail. But the point is that the clarity about my unique ability has allowed me to prioritize where I'm at my best. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of what I do with my assistant or even my wife or my COO is to constantly reorient things. Hey, am I out of alignment? Are we out of sync? Let's go back and look at this and making sure, because everything creeps in. Everyone, you know, the DMs and the emails and the requests and everything, it's always creeping in. So just that constant reorientation to make sure that it's like a compass, right? Like if you're flying to a destination, I fly a lot. The pilot, they never go in a straight line. They have a ton of little tiny course corrections to make sure they're generally on the straight line. It is not a perfect, you know, exact line. It's a very slight back and forth, making sure that you're always pointing towards your destination. I think that's what a lot of this boils down to as well. And so having people in my life who can help support me in reorienting as needed to make sure that I'm pointed toward the goals that I want.
I love that. You said the word clarity, and earlier in weariness, you said, what sets me apart? And I love that really tight focus, like a laser beam. We could be pretty colors of the rainbow, or we could get that really tight focus on. I love that. And yeah, definitely want to check out that Dan Sullivan program. I have absolutely heard of Dan, and you've been in it about 2 years.
Yes. Yeah. It's awesome.
Is it something you stay in forever, or you tell me about it?
So Dan has this quip where he says his best clients are the ones who have deep pockets and long-term memory loss or something like that. But his point is like some of these people have been in it for a very long time. I think of coach as church for entrepreneurs. And that may sound silly, but what when I go to church, I've heard all those messages before. I've read those scriptures before. I know what they're talking about, but I'm at a particular point in my life where what the speaker is saying or what I'm reading lands a little bit differently. And simply being in the pew and hearing that message tied to my life and my current circumstances is this continual just impression upon me that's always kind of precise with what I need to hear. I think of coach the same way. They've got some awesome tools, but a lot of them are you know, simple prompt questions to get you thinking and get you putting you in little breakout sessions with different groups. And so none of it, I would say, is like super revolutionary.
Right.
It's just church for entrepreneurs where you're hearing the right things that you need on a particular cadence. There's this core quarterly, their quarterly meetings, so that as you're going through different seasons of life or your business or whatever, wow, okay, thinking about this is now prompting a lot of thoughts of what I need to go fix here, or what I need to do there. So that's how I think about it, is it's got merit, it's got substance, it's important. No one's going to sit there and be like, oh my gosh, this is the most revolutionary thing, even though it's impactful. But it's the cadence, the frequency,
yes,
the people that you're with, all of that has made it very impactful for me.
Right. And I think it's so good you're sharing with people. And I tell other people this, I can't do it for myself. You can't do it for yourself. There's something about the fact that we have to be with other people. We're meant to be in fellowship and community with one another, where somebody is an expository teacher. I love the Church for Entrepreneurs, where we can't read our own label. So I love that you're really bringing that out, that even somebody like you, Connor, we all are unfolded by getting in collaboration with other people. And yep, there is nothing new under the sun, but the discovery process is until our last breath. You know what I'm saying? When we get it perfect on the other side. So thank you for that. Okay. Loneliness, weariness, abandonment. The last topic my father talked about is vision. And, you know, we hear about this, you know, visionary, and you think, oh, somebody with this Mensa IQ, or just they're born with this dove alighting on their heads or something like that. But he said, Tracy, vision is really just seeing what needs to be done and doing it. So he had this kind of like attraction kind of thing, but very tactical, strategic and tactical. How do you craft your vision, and what's next for your organization, Connor?
A couple of recommendations and then the answer to what's next. So I struggled for a while to communicate vision. Mm-hmm. You know, you got your mission statement, your vision statement, and most vision statements, when you read them, do not help anyone else envision anything. They suffer from massive curse of knowledge, where the people who created them understand what they're saying, but they're, yes, not meaningful to your vendors, to your customers, to, you know, random people viewing your website. There is a book called Vivid Vision by Cameron Harold, and he's very well known in the entrepreneurial community. He runs a group called COO Alliance for number twos in organizations. But his book, Vivid Vision, is not a long book, and it talks about how you create a vision statement that is explicit and detailed. The very simplified version is, imagine yourself traveling 3 years into the future, and then you look around your organization and what do you see? And you describe in detail what you see in that aspirational sense, like, wow, look, my fundraising team is have all these relationships and they've attracted all this interest in our work. And my communications team is making daily videos for social media, and they're getting a lot of engagement and people are sharing them. And, you know, look at my policy team changing all these laws. More detail than that. But the point is, be very detailed by department or by topic in your organization. And then you reverse engineer how to get there. Mm-hmm. You say, okay, like what's the yearly goal that, you know, for this to be true in 3 years, what has to be true this quarter? What foundation do we need to lay this year? So that process has really helped me as a leader, not only clarify my own vision, but to communicate it. When I hire people now, I make them read, before I even hire them, I make them read the Vivid Vision, and we talk about it. It's like a 3 or 4 page long document. They read it, and I say, now's your time to ask any questions, because this is the direction that we're going and what is unclear to you. And they love it. Wow, this helps me totally understand what you guys are trying to do, and I want to be a part of this. And so Vivid Vision, I highly recommend, from Cameron Harold. Now, in terms of what we're building, and I'll be brief here, we have a few different facets to what we're doing. We have our policy work that we've talked about, changing laws. We have these Tuttle Twins children's books that have sold like 5 million copies and teach kids entrepreneurship and freedom and all the rest. And then we have another program called the Children's Entrepreneur Market. These are kind of like farmers markets, but they're run entirely by the kids. Mom and dad can help set up, they can take down, but the kids run the show. And we incubated this program in Utah for 5 years to refine the model. We got it well-oiled machine. Then we said, now we're ready to scale. This year we added 6 states. Next year we're adding 10 more. And within 3 or 4 years, we're going to be fully national with this program, serving hundreds of thousands of kids across the country with entrepreneurial experiences, so that they can learn not just money and customer service, but, you know, marketing and economics and business and all kinds of stuff. So how do all these things fit together? Policy reform. We got the children's books, Tuttle Twins. We got the kids markets. The vision here, what I have envisioned, is what I call the pyramid of impact. So the bottom layer of this pyramid is entrepreneurship. I think entrepreneurship is apolitical. It's not like left or right. It's very American. Everyone loves the lemonade stands and everything. So we're going to go across the country as we scale this program up, and we're going to serve hundreds of thousands, millions of families with entrepreneurship experiences. I don't care if they're left or right or blue, red, purple, whatever. We're going to draw people in through entrepreneurship. Now we're establishing some rapport with them. We're building trust. We're building a relationship. They know who we are. The next layer of the pyramid then is education. So the kids who come to our entrepreneur markets get Tuttle Twins books, and we send them our cartoons, and we send them curriculum, and we have them join our community. And we have, you know, and so we educate them over time in these ideas of free markets and freedom. And then moving up the ladder, we get into things like activation or application where, for example, let's say, Tracy, where do you live? I don't know that I remember.
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, South Central PA.
Okay, so we're in, right now we have markets in the broader Pittsburgh area in Pennsylvania. Let's say, I'm trying to remember the name of the think tank there. There's little groups all over the country, but there's some organizations in Pennsylvania who work with legislators or their city councils or the school boards. What if, let's say 5 years from now, there's a big legal battle. Let's say they're trying to, I'll just be silly for a moment. Let's say they're trying to ban youth entrepreneurship. No one may engage in any economic activity until they're 18, right? That'd be a silly law, but let's pretend for a moment. What if the groups they're working in your backyard in Pennsylvania could come to us and put out the word and say, guys, we need help. We need people to come to this legislative hearing, or we need people to come testify, or we need people to sign this petition, or whatever it is. Now imagine if I've got this network of, let's say, 25,000 families in your state who've been coming to our markets, who have been reading our books, who've been learning about these ideas, and then we present them with an opportunity to go activate those ideas. Hey guys, you've been learning about it. Here's your opportunity to stand up and actually do something about it. So the vision here is we're building out this national community engagement program through entrepreneurship and education, so that as we move them up the ladder, the pyramid, or the pyramid of impact, we can then get them up to application and activation, where they're applying the ideas that they're learning, they're activated, they're civically engaged. No one is doing this. Those of us who are on kind of the conservative libertarian side, we wait to communicate our ideas until people are adults. We let the schools indoctrinate the kids. They often do a very poor job, turn into little socialist, social justice warriors. And then we wonder, why don't these people support freedom? It's because we're not talking to our kids. So we are like the only game in town trying to build this ecosystem, reaching into the rising generation, educating them and their parents, and then shepherding them into the future to help be partners with us on the Titanic to get people on those speedboats and to safety.
I love it. Love it, Connor. I cannot wait to hear more. And I can't wait. I'm going to check out what's going on in Pittsburgh. And I know we'll stay in touch and hear how this grows. Sure, we'll be thinking about you in our prayers and thoughts and whatever we can do to move that along.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so Connor, we talked about loneliness, weariness, abandonment, and vision. Anything else in the leadership sphere, while we have our audience who I'm sure is just absolutely adoring this, anything else that you want to share in your years, especially the last 12, that you want to impart with our listeners?
This is what comes to mind. Anyone can be a leader. I used to build websites for a living. Like, who am I, right? I have no formal training. I'm up at the Capitol debating with the Attorney General and the Governor's General Counsel, sitting in this room, hashing out this policy thing. I built websites for a living. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an economist. Like, I have no formal background in any of the stuff that I'm doing. I teach kids economics. I have no degree in economics. My degree's in computers. So I believe that everybody can be a leader.
Yes.
If I can do it, so can you. And maybe my sphere of influence is bigger or smaller than yours. That's not the point. The point is everyone is and can be a leader to a few other people in your circle of influence. So the things that you talk and write about, these ideas are relevant to everybody, because it's not like, oh, well, I'm not a CEO of a large organization, so I guess I don't need to think. Like, no, everyone can and should rise up and waste and wear out your life trying to do good things for other people. In my mind, that's what leadership is.
I love it. And I love that you say that sense of humility. I have met so many unbelievable, like the past 2 weeks, I've met world-class, like no kidding, trailblazers, not just leaders, but the first of the first. And they're sitting there next to me. And had I not really kept asking them questions, you never would. And they're just like, oh, I'm just a small town girl from Iowa, or I just grew up in Las Vegas. Who'd have? And I'm like, So I love that you said that, because I think real authentic leaders just have that sense of humility and are just willing to step up because they realize you have this compulsion, you know, you're addicted to it, and you've caught that fire. And I thank you for encouraging everybody else out there, because they look at people like you and say, well, if I was Connor, I could do this. No, you can do it. And your words are a great encouragement to our listeners, Connor.
Awesome. Glad to hear it.
Excellent. Okay, well, Connor, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you, support Libertas, get the Tuttle Twin books? I'll put it in the show notes, but what's the best way that people can get in touch with you?
So Tuttle Twins books, the best place is at our website, tuttletwins.com, where you can get deals and bundles and everything together. The children's markets are at childrensentrepreneurmarket.com. Yes, okay. That's a mouthful. Libertas Institute is libertas.org.
Okay.
Fun fact for your viewers who are listening, so they can impress someone at a party. The Statue of Liberty, her name is Libertas. Libertas is the Roman goddess of liberty. It's Lady Liberty is Libertas. So next time you can impress someone by saying, well, do you know what the name of the Statue of Liberty is? And so that's libertas.org. And then I'm at connorboyack.com.
Excellent. And we'll put all this in the show notes. And Connor, I just can't thank you enough. Thank you for the enthusiasm. Thank you for your clarity. And thank you for coming on and sharing of your time with our listeners.
I'm happy to. We'll chat soon.
Absolutely. And to our listeners out there, thank you so much for listening. Remember, you'll be the same person 5 years from now that you are today, except for two things: the people you meet and the books you read. So make sure they're both tremendous. If you like what you hear, please hit the like, the subscribe button, leave us the honor of a review, get in touch with Connor, get the kids and the grands and the great grands some of those Tuttle Twins books. And everybody, please keep having a tremendous life. We are so thankful for you. Have a tremendous rest of the day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Tremendous Leadership with Dr. Tracy Jones. Find out more about Dr. Jones at www.tremendousleadership.com. If you've been ignited by something you heard in this episode, let us know by leaving a review for Tremendous Leadership wherever you listen to podcasts, or by sending us a message through www.tremendousleadership.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.